Hi, this is Mark and Laura here from Enjoy Life Slowly. Are you too busy, too stressed, and too overwhelmed by everything you're supposed to do, be, and own? Are you so busy rushing around, connecting, consuming, competing, that you don't have time for the important things in life? Then the answer is to slow down and simplify, and in this Enjoy Life Slowly interview series, you'll find out from the people who know exactly how to get your life back in control. These interviews were conducted in the field, and the quality of the conversation may be better than the quality of the audio.
Hi everybody, this is Mark and Laura from Enjoy Life Slowly, and today we're chatting to Alison and Andrew, who run the fabulously named site cheeseweb.eu. Hello.
Hello. Welcome both. It is so good of you to take time out to chat with us today. We're really pleased.
Thanks for having us. It's wonderful to be on the show.
No worries. And at the moment, where are you in Canada?
We are on the East Coast in a city called St. John, which is where I grew up.
Hey.
Brilliant. And what's the weather like there at the moment? Is it getting well your end?
It's starting to get pretty winter-like. I think winter is coming here, so we're hunkering down and getting ready for snow.
Earlier this morning, we were loading wood into the basement for the fire.
All right. Okay.
You'll be well prepared.
So you're going to lock down. That's okay. Well, at least in Europe, it's winter coming along as well, so you're not missing out too much on that side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I've got to ask, first of all, I know it is a cheesy question, but we did have to ask this. Why CheeseWeb? Because it is the most fantastic name on the
planet. Yeah, exactly.
I have all the kind of things you come across. It's such a great name.
Well, it's pretty random for a travel site, but we started when we were living in Amsterdam, actually, 12 years ago. And the blog was my hobby and just kind of a way to connect with people back home. Keep it as CheeseWeb. They loved the name. And so it stuck. And now we're CheeseWeb for good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think there's a lot of myth about the name of your site. I mean, sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes it doesn't really matter. If you look at all the sites out there, some of them have got the most bizarre names in the world, aren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, yours has been going, I believe, isn't it, Alison, for over 10 years now?
Yeah, we're probably up to almost 12 years now, I think. So only about, 6 or 7 of those we've really taken it seriously. But yeah, we've been online for a long time.
Well, I'd have to say you've taken it very seriously, because I'm sure I saw a post where you said you've written 1,000 posts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's taking it really seriously, I got to tell you.
Yeah, one of the challenges when you start writing that much is trying to figure out how to balance all of the, or to how to, people can find all the information on the site, trying to figure out how to organize it.
Well, it looks pretty organized at the minute. We really navigate around easily. Got some great stuff.
That's great.
That's good. So can I just take us back a step then, because you were saying about being in Amsterdam before, and with absolutely no disrespect to our European cousins, we now know that you're in Belgium, and we're intrigued. How did a couple of dazzling Canadian urbanites like yourselves end up in what to a lot of people's eyes is a little bit of a rural backwater like Belgium?
So actually it's the other way around. We came from really rural cities in Canada with tiny populations, and we were thrown into the capital of Europe in Brussels, living in the city center. So it was really a huge change for us, but it was all for Andrew's job.
My fault. It's what she keeps telling us.
And it was supposed to be temporary. We were only supposed to be there for 2 or 3 years, and Belgium ended up growing on us, and we lived there for 11 years almost.
Yeah. So the story is that my company had offices in the Netherlands. And we had talked about me moving over to the Netherlands for that, to help out with that office. And then just as that was happening, my company got acquired by another company. And the new company didn't have offices in the Netherlands. Then they had an office in Belgium. And so they said, well, we still want you to go to Europe, but you're going to go to Belgium. And yeah, I mean, but at this point in time, we'd spent a grand total of like a weekend in Belgium. I think we did Bruges and Brussels.
Yeah. 3 days total before we moved there. So
and our only other experience of Belgium was on a bus tour in 2001, when our bus tour guide had stated, we're going to be driving through Belgium. At some point in time, we will stop dead in the middle of the highway. But there's no rhyme or reason for the traffic in Belgium. It just will stop.
and you know what? Right.
He was right.
So are you actually still in Brussels, or are you elsewhere when you're in Belgium?
Well, we were based in Brussels up until May, and that's when we basically got rid of just about everything we owned and bought a little motorhome and left to travel full time around Europe.
Brilliant, because one of the things I do love about your site is that it's you've got so many different articles on different things to do with traveling, and obviously food and all that sort of thing that you expect. But one of the things I really noticed about it is that it does seem to be a people-centric blog rather than actually about places, even though ostensibly, it really is a travel blog.
Yeah, I don't know that that was intentional at first, but certainly what we've discovered as we travel is we love connecting with people and learning why they're doing what they're doing. Whether that's running a small business or producing some kind of food or anything, really, there's always an interesting story there.
Yeah, when you take a chance to slow down and talk with people, then you find out that there's a story. And you know, it comes down to the tagline that we have within the website is that everywhere is somewhere. It doesn't matter where you're going. You know, as long as you take the time to stop and get to know the people that are there, then anywhere you go can be an interesting place.
That's true, actually, because we've actually got a couple of friends who are German and Polish. And to get to Poland and Germany, you'd have to travel through Belgium from here. And they rather rudely always used to state that Belgium was the thing that got in the way between them getting to where they wanted
yeah,
to go.
That is definitely a common belief.
Yeah, and I mean, we love Belgium. We've been going to Belgium an awful long time. In fact, the first time I ever went to Europe, when I was about 18, I thought I was cycling to Paris, and I actually ended up cycling to Brussels. That was bad. My geography was of Europe at the time. And since then, we must have been back four or five times.
Yeah.
And we love the place. I love the... It's a very slow place, isn't it? Outside of Brussels, that is.
It is. It's very laid back. And Belgians really don't self-promote. And I think that's one of the reasons why they have such a bad reputation.
Yeah, it's easy to find something that is unusual there.
We had a bit of an advantage in going to Belgium a few times because we're tandem fanatics, which
yes.
is yes, exactly, very very bizarre. But the Belgians, they love that. It's one of the
yep.
few places in Europe where they actually understand what it is. So if you go there on a tandem, you get extra special treatment very often.
Yeah.
One of the things that is terrible about Belgium is that cycling in Brussels is a dangerous sport. You know.
It's slowly getting better. They do have big improvement plans, and it has gotten better since we've lived there. But still, cycling in the city itself is
only
quite challenging.
Only for the brave, yeah.
I do remember the tram lines were an absolute nightmare when I cycled there.
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, just they didn't really think about that as part of building Brussels. They didn't think about anything other than, well, we're going to have people. We'll just put people everywhere and we won't worry about the roads.
It's still a problem, whether you're on foot or in a car or on a bike.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
It wasn't built for movement.
But we're definitely with you on the slow travel bit. We're complete slow travel addicts and we usually find the slowest possible means. We used to, like Mark said, we've been avid cyclists for a long time and we've walked hundreds of miles all over Europe. And our latest thought at the moment is a golf cart, because if you're going to go motorised, it's as slow as you possibly can. But I'm always interested, because when we talk to people who've been to the same place as us, our experiences are so different if they haven't travelled slowly. And I often open a conversation thinking, gosh, it sounds like you missed all the best bits that we saw. Is that something you find?
Absolutely. And up until we recently started our motorhome trip, it was what we found ourselves doing a lot too, because we would have maybe a long weekend to travel somewhere. So what do? You hop on a plane and you fly somewhere and you land in the middle of a city and then you spend your 3 or 4 days checking off the top 10 list of things that you're supposed to see. And so we did that for quite a few years before we realized that that really wasn't the way that we wanted to travel. We wanted to take our time, to be able to sit in a cafe and do nothing for an hour and not feel guilty that we weren't looking at something famous, you know? And just being able to connect with people and really understand what a place is all about. Because yes, cities are famous for certain things, but the people that live there are not doing so generally because of those sites. One of the big ones for me was Paris. We traveled to Paris probably 5 times and I hated it. But we were always rushing around and we have to see this and we have to go to this exhibition and we have to do that. It wasn't until we went to Paris for a weekend with absolutely no plan other than we went to visit friends one evening, but we had 2 whole days to ourselves to just kind of wander and explore. And I fell absolutely in love with the city because we had no agenda. We had nothing we had to do. And that's when I really felt that I got a sense of the place.
I absolutely agree. We were talking to actually Sean D'Souza, who runs a lovely blog, not actually related to travel, but he talks about travel a lot. And his family have got this tagline, which is known as the Five Sight family. And they say they will not see more than 5 sights in one day. If they see 5 sights, all the family have agreed, then they stop sightseeing after that. And they have no agenda.
That's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Which is what they do. So I think that's, you know, it's a much nicer way to go, isn't it?
But you're so right also, going to see the sights, and sometimes they can be incredible, but they don't really tell you anything about the country, the people, what life's really like. I think we haven't been sightseeing in hundreds of years now, have we? No. We tend to just wander and look and walk and lots of eating, definitely lots of eating.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think eating's the best way to get to know a culture.
Definitely.
Especially if you can find street food, because that's the closest you're going to get to what normal people eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, we were talking about Belgian fries, weren't we, in an exchange? Which, when you're traveling, I find...
Yeah, they're definitely good fuel, but I wouldn't have them every day. You might have a heart attack.
No, yeah. No, obviously not. I mean, obviously they are excellent, and obviously being British, you have to stand up for them. But obviously, there's a lot more to that. I know that on your site, you've got a lot of stuff about slow food. And in our interview series, we have talked to Richard McCarthy of Slow Food USA and Shane Holland of Slow Food UK. So where does slow food fit into sort of the cheese whip philosophy on your site? How does that fit into your sort of slow travel?
Well, we've always been passionate foodies, starting with the fact that we love to eat pretty much everything. We're both committed omnivores. And I love to cook. And I think more and more as I was cooking, I was thinking about the ingredients. And we were both thinking about the things that we were eating and where they were coming from. And this goes back to sort of the everybody has a story idea. We became really interested in talking to chefs and talking to food producers. And I think the more you do that, the more you realize the effort that goes into food production, not in the big mass food production sense, but in your local farmer and your local producer. And as we heard more of their stories, I think it became more important for us to support them. And let's face it, local food, just, it tastes better.
Yeah, because it's regional, it's seasonal, it's based on what people there eat. It's
produced with passion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So I think slow food is really one of the core pieces of what we talk about in terms of, you know, our agenda, if you will.
We're absolutely agree with you. Obviously, we spend a lot of time in France. My family's French. We've got a house there. And obviously, they, you know, they're very passionate about that in all the small places where we are, all the local markets and everything like that. And we're quite fortunate back in the UK. We live in an area just above North London, Buckinghamshire, that is very, very keen on that as well. All the local butchers just carry the local meat and that kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of that sort of thing around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's one of those things that's great, that we don't have that in Canada. And I noticed that here is that we don't have a really local butcher. I mean, there's very few butchers in Canada at this point in time. We don't have a local bread maker. We have very few markets. You know, it's just, there's none of that sense of community production.
We're losing touch with where our food is coming from.
Yeah. You know, there is a resurgence somewhat of local markets, and we start to see a growth in that. You know, Toronto's got their market. Mm. Halifax is a market. You know, it's coming back, but it's, you know, it is something that used to be here, but now it's gone. and we see it still in Europe, and we really want that to come back here, is that concept of local, seasonal people producing the food that they eat.
Yeah, we were talking to Wendy Abrahams, who runs a site called On Slow Living. And I can't remember which part of America she's in now. My brain's a little bit lost. But she was saying there that actually in the local towns, they've now re-established local farmers markets after many, many years of them not being there.
Oh, she's in Los Angeles, which is a real surprise to us. That's not the image we have of it at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think California in general has a big slow food movement. They produce a lot of food there. Agriculture is huge. I mean, obviously it's not what you think of when you think of Los Angeles, but the rest of the state is really agriculture based. So I think, as Andrew said, there is a resurgence, but it's a luxury. You know, it's still expensive to buy local compared to going to the supermarket and buying in bulk.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from, prior to the Second World War, all the farmers were small family holdings. After as of the Second World War, we started to get into mechanization of farming, and you got into mass farming, and then you got into all the chemical compounds to go into mass farming, and farms started getting huge. I mean, the farms out west are enormous. I mean, they take up the size of small countries at this point in time, and that's one farm.
Yeah.
You know, so we lose touch with the way things are produced. And, it was funny when we were visiting my brother out in Manitoba, we were passing all of these wonderful fields of wheat that are there. And, the hockey team there is called the Wheat Kings, obviously. But, ask them about getting fresh vegetables. It's impossible to get fresh vegetables there because all the land is being used to produce wheat. So it's not a crop that farmers are willing to invest in. So then you have people who are our generation, so, in their mid-30s or so, that are coming back and saying, I want to do something different. They're buying up small properties and starting their own small farms and things like that, and starting to get back into the communities here. So it's not even though that we have to go and just create the farmers markets. We actually have to encourage people to be farmers again, because we've lost that. We've lost people who want to work on the land. And so, before we can even have farmers markets, we have to encourage people to want to actually produce the foods that we eat. So it's a bigger challenge than just let's start a farmers market.
I was going to say, actually, I think it was Richard McCarthy of Slow Food USA who was telling us that I'm not quite absolutely sure, but I think he was saying the average age of farmers in America is something like 69 or 70.
Yeah,
I would believe that for sure.
It's amazing, isn't it? And on the slow food theme, we've had some wonderful conversations with Geir Bertelsen. I don't know if you know his site, the World Institute of Slowness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this great new thing going on at the minute. He wants to make slow beer, which sounds fantastic. it's his baby project at the minute.
Well, then he really has to visit Belgium, because in Belgium, there's a lot of slow beer happening. Yeah,
there's a lot of slow everything happening in Belgium. Slow construction, slow traffic.
Yeah, but that's not on purpose, though, is it?
But there's a lot of slow beer in Belgium as well. Are you beer aficionados?
That's one of my things is beer. Allison's unfortunately allergic to beer, but I try and make up for her inability to drink it.
Because we try our best. Every time we go to Belgium, we try and try all the very rare beers there, because they've got so many different kind of small manufacturers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But unfortunately, neither of us like beer, so no matter how much we try, we can't get it down.
Yeah, but eventually you keep trying and you'll find one that you like. There's a beer out there for everybody.
Well, if you force yourself to like it. Well, we'll let you know when we find ours. So let's talk about slow for a minute, because we recently wrote an article and we were talking to a former American journalist who herself has come up with many amazing articles. And she insisted on telling us that there was no point telling people to slow down because they simply wouldn't believe it. She said it was impossible with all the pressures of modern living. How would you convince somebody who felt that way, not only that they could slow down, but really and truly that they need to?
I think that's a tough one, because in a way, I agree with her. I think it is very hard to convince somebody who's not ready to be convinced that slow is the way. So I think in a way, you kind of have to come to that on your own. But I think in terms of convincing people, we don't believe in pushing people into our lifestyle, because I think everybody has to find what works best for them, and what works for us may not work for somebody else. But I think our hope is that we can show people that there is a different way, and that it's possible, and that you don't need a lot of possessions to live. You don't need to make a lot of money to travel. You don't need money and possessions to live a happy, fulfilled, wonderful life. And so if people can see us doing that and they take some inspiration for that, that's what we would like.
It's, yeah, and it's very hard with the way that our society is built around commercialism, to get people away from wanting the new iPod or the new iPad or the new Mercedes or whatever, because that's our society's geared up to tell us that we should have these things or we should want these things. And it, unless somebody gets themselves away from that, it's really hard to tell them that that's not necessarily true, that you don't need that. They, as Allison said, they need to come to that sort of realization themselves. They have to pull themselves out of that constant messaging about you need more, you deserve more, you should have more.
I think you're right. And the best way, I think, is by example. If they can see people like you having such a wonderful time just by living differently, that's got to be the, you know, the first thing that's going to pull them up short and go, oh, there is another way.
Yeah. And we always talk about it being down to choices. You know, what we chose to do is, you know, is completely possible for someone else to choose to do, but it is a choice. You know, we choose not to have a house. We choose to live in a motorhome. Not everybody's going to want to have that choice, but when someone looks at it and says, I wish I could do what you're doing, you can do what we're doing. There's no reason why you cannot do what we're doing. It simply comes down to your choices. If you want to do it, you will choose to move your life in a way that enables you to do that. If you choose not to do that, you choose something else. That's fine. There's no problem with that. We have, you know, we're not judging. That's your choice. But realizing that it's a choice is the first thing.
And the choice isn't always easy. I mean, certainly we've made a lot of sacrifices to live the life that we're living.
Yeah.
You know, we had it really good in Brussels. Andrew had a great job. We ate out all the time. We were very social. We did a lot of really amazing things. Now we're having amazing experiences, but in a completely different way on a much, much, much tighter budget. So it's all a balance, and as Andrew said, it all comes back to choices.
Yeah, if you've got three kids and a dog and, you know, a mortgage, you're not going to be able to make the same choices in the same time frame that we did. You know, you can still make choices.
Everybody can make the choice to change their life, but it's not always easy. And I know your change from house to motorhome hasn't always been easy from some of the posts I've read on your site. Could you tell us about a couple of the challenges you had?
Well, one of our biggest challenges was getting rid of everything so we could move into the motorhome. We ended up getting it much later than we hoped. So we had grand illusions that we were going to have a couple of months to pack things into it and get it all sorted away. And
we had 8 hours.
In the end, we had 8 hours, and Andrew was running back and forth to the apartment to where we had the motorhome parked, because surprisingly, you can't just park a motorhome in the middle of downtown Brussels. So I was in the motorhome stuffing things randomly into any nook and cranny I could find, and Andrew was driving our car back and forth to the motorhome with loads of stuff, and dropping last minute things off at friends' houses, and so that was kind of a nightmare.
And dealing with closing up the apartment and getting that signed back over to the landlords, etc.
Yeah, it was a pretty manic final week.
So had you already got interested in minimalism then? And had it helped you out? Had you already sort of decluttered a lot of stuff that you had?
Well, strangely, we have been on kind of a backwards minimal kick since we left Canada, but not really intentionally until recently. So when we got married, we did the whole thing where we bought a house and we moved in, and so we bought a house, we moved in, we got the word that we were to go to Belgium, and we had to get rid of all of our stuff. So we did that. We found a house to rent in Belgium, and it was still much bigger than we needed, because we were still in this mindset of, oh, we need a big house. So we did that. We lived there for 3 years. The house was still half empty. So we decided, why are we living in this big house that we don't really need? So we downsized again into a much smaller apartment in the city center. And we lived there for 8 years. And then we had the motorhome idea and thinking, oh, well, we can't possibly have that much stuff. Our apartment is tiny. I mean, surely it won't take us that long to get rid of things. And then it ended up taking a good 6 months of scrambling to get rid of all the stuff that we didn't think we even had. And then pack what was little remaining into a tiny motorhome.
And did it fit in the motorhome? Because we made an error sort of that way round once when we moved, before we got into sort of simplifying our life at all. We lived in it wasn't a very big house. I think it was like 3 bedrooms or something. But we made the mistake of going, oh, we're going to get a smaller place, which we did, an apartment, but we didn't actually think of decluttering before we moved. So we just shifted everything from the big place to the small place and then found that we couldn't actually even walk around the rooms because there was so much stuff in them.
Well, our motorhome is named Amelia, but we jokingly also call her the TARDIS because we were shocked at how much stuff we did manage to get in there. I take full credit with my ninja packing skills, but but yeah, about, I would say, 2 months into our trip, we actually did another big downsizing and got rid of even more stuff that that we just found that we weren't using and we didn't need. So I think the minimalism kind of becomes an addiction, and we're definitely addicted now.
And have you learned to be super tidy?
I wouldn't say super tidy, but when you're in a small space, you're kind of forced to be pretty tidy, because especially when your small space moves, you can't just leave stuff sitting on tables. It does have to be packed up every time you're getting ready to pull away.
Mm-hmm. So you found that interest in minimalism now has kind of really, really helped you now you've moved to the motorhome.
Yeah, definitely. And we're finding more and more ways to bring that minimalism into our life. Actually, one of the places we visited in France was a kind of a minimalist dream cabin in the mountains. And we stayed there for a night to do a review. And we were seriously looking around the place thinking, I wonder if we could live in a place this small.
It was quite an interesting spot. It was beautiful. And definitely...
Was it as small as the tiny homes that they have in America?
Oh, yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Very much so. It was about 9 square meters at the base, and it was 2 levels. And downstairs they had a small kitchen, they had a sitting area, and 2 big doors that opened up over on a small balcony that you could overlook the valley. So you could actually turn the inside into outdoors as well. So you had this much bigger space once you opened the doors. And then upstairs was just kind of a loft bedroom, which they just had a bed there, but there's so much more you could do with that in terms of storage, etc., that it was a perfect little space that in, you know, less than 30 square meters, you could reasonably live in that.
And it was also completely sustainable. It was powered by solar. It had a composting toilet.
Yeah.
It was really fabulous. So we were seriously thinking and making some mental calculations about if something like that would be possible if we decide to park up the motorhome at some point.
And then you add on top of that, they said the price per cabin was 10,000 euros. So yeah, exactly. I mean, for 10,000 euros, you can have your entire house. And then, you know, you've got this fabulous spot that you pick a spot, find the land, you know, put this €10,000 cabin on it. I think it'd be brilliant.
Absolutely.
Oh, without any doubt. We actually stayed in one just like that, exactly as you're describing.
Yeah.
Actually, just outside Birmingham, strangely, in the UK, which was, you're amazed at. We didn't think such things existed, but we actually rented one there. And it was the same. It had a composting toilet. It had solar panels.
Yeah.
And it was self-sufficient. Just on the river, just outside Birmingham. So we thought it was lovely. We'd have loved to have lived there as well. I absolutely agree. Can I just ask you something, Andrew? Because we've had a couple of breaks. I'm going to have to cut a few bits out of the interview. Are you okay for about another 10 minutes? Because I know we're overrunning a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay,
oh,
thank
brilliant.
You
actually,
for that.
I didn't want to answer. Can I go back to the motorhome bit a second? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could I just ask you, because we've always travelled by very slow means. You know, we've travelled by bicycles and walking, and we built a motor cruiser that did a maximum of about 4 miles an hour. So our travelling's been
rowing boat.
Yeah, and I think the fastest we've ever managed is scooters, which were restricted to 30 miles an hour. So that's like sort of maximum we've managed to get to. But we have actually travelled by car. We once travelled around Europe by car. And what we found was, is it was really hard to do what you're doing, to actually not go too far, because you could just keep travelling. So in your motorhome, how do you make sure you do kind of do that everywhere is somewhere and not just sort of blast through a place? Because like I'm in Belgium, for obvious reasons, you could drive through in a day.
No. Oh, in terms of size, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Belgium, you can drive through in a couple of hours. So, we've actually run into this challenge with the motorhome. And when we first set out in May, we set out with a plan to work with a number of tourism departments throughout France. And we actually found ourselves traveling much faster than we wanted to be traveling. And we, you know, it was fabulous. We had a great time. But when we were putting 100, 150 kilometers on the machine every day, it wasn't exactly what we were considering slow travel. What we've determined that we need to do is to be able to basically travel to a spot, stay in that spot, travel around a little bit there, and use it as a base to explore an area a little bit more in depth than we would normally do. It is easy in this motorhome to slow down, because if you go too fast in a motorhome, it makes a lot of noise inside.
And things start flying out of cupboards, and that's not good.
And it's actually takes a lot more energy to drive a motorhome for a long time than it does to drive a car. A car, you can get in, you can drive for hours and not really feel it. At least we can. For me, driving the motorhome, because you're thinking about the dimensions of the motorhome, the size, you know, height, width, you know, and what you're dealing with in terms of wind and the road conditions, there's just you're paying more attention to what's going on, and it becomes more tiring. And then of course all the noise behind you in the motorhome, as every dish rattles over every bump, it's not fun to drive long distances in the motorhome. So it lends itself better to wanting to stop and, you know, and explore more than a car would.
And I think the other thing that we found too is we're not on holiday, so there's no pressure of a deadline of we have to get to X by Wednesday. It's, you know, we go a little distance and then we stop. We don't really have those kind of timelines, at least not when we're not working with tourism agencies who like timelines a lot. Yes,
apparently. I mean, they like to know when we're going to be
there. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. But, yeah, so we kind of set ourselves some rules that we try not to break. One of those is not traveling on motorways. We try not to travel more than 50 kilometers or so in a day, although that varies depending where we can find a place to camp for the night as well. But we also need to take time every day to do work, and we also need to take time every day just to relax and remember to live the slow life.
Yeah, and we've just determined there are three things you can do in a day. I mean, there's lots of things you can do, but three main things. You can drive, you can explore, or you can work. And you can only actually achieve two of those three things every day successfully. Because to drive, it takes an hour. Well, you know, let's say it's an hour to get the machine ready to go, and also clean everything up, get everything stored away, get off and onto the road. And it takes another hour once you get set up to get to the place to get set up again or to find another place. So that's energy draining. So slow travel with motorhome is really, I mean, I think that's fundamental to it, because you don't want to travel long distances and you don't want to have to travel every day.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, I've never been to Canada, but have you had some fun experiences on the small European roads you rode home, especially maybe Spain and places? Because they're quite interesting, aren't they? They get pretty small and pretty rough.
Yes, we've had some interesting experiences going through the Lot River Valley in France. There's a lot of hand-carved tunnels along the river there that where our motorhome is 2.9-ish meters tall, and the tunnels are 3-ish meters tall. So you kind of go through there biting your nails going, I hope I measured that correctly.
And also, I was going to say, some of the small Spanish villages and French villages, the little roads, even in a car, are hard enough to get down. When we actually moved from the UK, we moved for a while to Spain, when we had a house in Spain. And we had a Pontiac Firebird, just a fun car. We sold, others went abroad with that. But we had to sell it because we couldn't get it down the streets. It was too high and too low. There was no way we could actually do it.
I would think with a Firebird, the height, the ride height would be the biggest problem in a lot of these places. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, some of these streets that are in some of these villages are two-way streets, and there's not enough room for one car, let alone two.
So far, knock on wood, we've only had to back up once, and that was when we were stuck beside a school bus, and that took some...
That took some jigging.
Yeah.
The tightest squeeze was a bus came at us through this gap between two buildings, which was only wide enough for the bus. And we had to scooch over as close to the wall on one side so it could go basically through the bushes on the other side of us to get around. So that was probably the tightest squeeze we had.
You're learning an awful lot about slow living, particularly in a motorhome.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Now, we know you have a fantastic following and we're intrigued. What, is there something that your audience tell you they feel is the biggest obstacle to slowing life down?
Well, I think the two things that we come up against time and time again is that people feel they have too many commitments and that they don't have enough money to do something like what we're doing. And commitments we understand because... You know, if something happens with your family or, you know, you have children, you have to take other people's needs into consideration. And sometimes there are no ways around that, at least not for the time being. And the money thing, that was a big concern for us, particularly for Andrew, before we started out on this adventure. How were we going to afford it? But I think one of the things that really helped us was trying to actually figure out what it was going to cost day to day. And honestly, if you don't own a house and you don't own a lot of stuff that you have to maintain, cost of living is really much, much less for us now than when we rented an apartment in Brussels and when Definitely. We owned a home in Canada.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a fraction of the cost. I mean... You know, we're looking at, you know, to live well, we're looking at 20,000 to 25,000 euros a year, you know, and that's of course owning the motorhome. But one of the things with our audience that I guess we really started out talking about was, okay, you're in Belgium. A lot of people don't even think about Belgium as a destination, and you know, they've got this whole audience in Belgium of expatriates who, you know, are looking for things to do. And very little information in Belgium about what to do in Belgium. And so one of the things we really started talking about and talking and we saw with our audience was a need to be able to explain to people that you don't need to go to Paris for the weekend. You can drive 5 minutes down the road and find an interesting thing to do. You can go to a spa if you want to spend $30. You can go and spend a day at a spa. And you don't have to leave the country to find something interesting to do. So we really looked at, what is it that we can do here that's around us, and what is it that is somewhat affordable, I guess, without having to go and splash out a bunch of money to do something.
And has that developed new interests in both of you? Have you found things that you have perhaps previously hadn't even thought of doing?
I really like going to the spa.
Actually, obviously spa comes from Belgium, doesn't it?
Yeah.
One of the things that we really like doing and that we started doing a couple of years ago when we first started dreaming about doing our own traveling was we started this concept called living room bed, where we would set up a kind of a futon in our living room and we would watch movies all day. We would put the technology away and we would watch movies about, you know, travel or, you know, documentaries about places to travel or what, things like that, things that didn't cost us any money to go in and do. And then we can wrap an entire day around the concept of travel or the concept of a particular destination.
So sometimes we would pick a theme destination like Hong Kong and we would find all kinds of movies and TV shows about Hong Kong, and then we would cook a bunch of foods from Hong Kong, and we would have our travel without traveling kind of day. So I think there are lots of things that you can do, even if you can't physically get in a car or get on a plane and go travel somewhere.
That sounds absolutely amazing. That sounds such a good idea. Yeah. And I have to say as well, what we find is that when we, it kind of forced us on us, when we travel to our house in France, which is quite a long way, and we always have a dog or something with us. I know you're cat people, so we go very, very slowly. It takes us about 2 days, sometimes 3 days to get there. But because we've traveled so far, when we get there, what we said to ourselves a few years ago is that we won't travel more than about an hour by car or more than about, you know, anything like that around the area. What we'll do is we'll stay where we are and find what there is to do where we are. And you discover so many more things that you can do. And because it's all local, it tends to be much less expensive than going to the big towns nearby.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you'll be surprised at everything you find, because even the locals will say, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So we have really kept you over time, and we do appreciate you hanging on because you've had a few blips with the internet. May we ask you just one more thing?
Absolutely.
If there is one thing you wanted people to take away from your fantastic sites, could you name it in one sentence?
Everywhere is somewhere. That's the big thing. Is it doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter how far you travel. You can go next door. Every place has a story. Every person has a story that you don't need to spend tens of thousands of dollars to go and have an experience. You can just drive to the town next to you and explore their market or explore whatever. There's something there for everybody, and we really fundamentally believe that regardless of where you go, there's something to do there. There's something interesting to be found.
That is absolutely true. That is very, very well put. I'd have to say I agree with you there totally.
Absolutely. And it's such a great strapline. It's actually got a proper message in it. It's fantastic. What can we say, guys? Have a wonderful time. I know you're not going to travel just so much for a little while because you're in Canada, but the minute you're back in your motorhome, we would so love to pick up with where you are and what you're doing and what you're discovering and exploring. And I do hope that we can have another chat like this again, hopefully with a slightly better connection.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That would be great. It's been lovely chatting with you guys. And thank you so much for following our journey and for inviting us to join you.
If you enjoyed this interview, then go to enjoylifeslowly.com. That's enjoylifeslowly.com for access to other great interviews and articles to slow down and simplify your life. The fabulous opening and closing music is Con Nombre de Tango by Daniel Bautista.
On the show.